Hey, welcome again to CISO Tradecraft. I'm here with Matt Hillary of the CISO of Drata, and we're going to talk about GRC and trust management and how to take your program to the next level. You're going to love what he's got to say, so stick around. Hello, and welcome back to the next episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is Jim Arcardi. I'm your host for today. And I have Matt Hillary from Drata, the CISO, with me today. Now, we're going to be talking about GRC, trust management, and one of the things that, well, everybody has to do. You comply with the regulations, you get the cyber insurance request, you have customer agreements, and what do? You fill out all these forms because there's a lot of compliance around. This isn't something new either. It's been with us for a number of years. And honestly, I think it's only going to become more and more of a burden because it's just not going away. And if you don't believe me, look at your role has gone from just IT to IT compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley. And now we got to deal with HIPAA, NYDFS, now data privacy with CCPA and GDPR and operational resilience with DORA, AI compliance, fraud, list, et cetera. It just keeps going on. So rather than complain about it, today we're going to do something about it. And we're going to talk with Matt, and we're going to look at how you can build a world-class GRC program and the core building blocks that you need to achieve this rather ambitious goal. Now, before we start getting into much of the weeds, Matt, first of all, welcome to the show, and could you introduce yourself, please?
Of course. Thanks so much, G-Mark. I'm super grateful to be here, you know, and I hope today I'm able to share some of my own experience with your listeners. And, you know, I truly appreciate what you do to help, you know, with the number of guests you have on the podcast and the amount of things we're able to learn from them. You also have just this fun, larger than life personality. It was great to meet with you at RSA and just get to chat with you there. Your voice is just as amazing in person as it is here on the podcast. So I listen to you on my walks or otherwise. So appreciate what you do. A little about me and a little about Drata. I'll introduce the company first. There's me. I'm Matt Hillary, Chief Information Security here, Officer here at Drata. You know, at Drata, we are a trust management platform, and we help over 7,500 customers on their respective GRC journeys. These are companies, large and small, enterprise and startups. You know, we started over a little over 4 years ago, and, you know, was the essence of using automation to help, you know, as the backbone of helping, you know, compliance programs continue to accelerate. That has then iterated into a fully fledged trust management platform to help customers with their compliance automation aspects, in addition to risk management, governance. You know, most recent stuff is the advent and inclusion of AI and a number of those elements, and helping kind of support that journey. You know, we started with automating a number of compliance efforts, like replacing spreadsheets and shared folders and screen prints, the things that used to plague our lives as GRC professionals. And honestly, under all of that are underlying data elements that we can use to then effectively perform control tests on a day-to-day basis to know where we stand. You know, I don't know about you, but audits were a source of significant anxiety for me. And now with capable GRC platforms we have today, I don't worry as much on that front anymore, because we have this helping support keeping our compliance programs where they should be, and continue to iterate forward on that journey. You know, really exciting news. You know, we just acquired SafeBase back in February. And in only that 4 years' time of Drata's existence, you know, we've surpassed the 100 million ARR mark. And so really happy to be able to see the company grow and the market respond and the amazing experiences our customers are having along the way.
That is awesome. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, of course, of course. So a little about me. I live here in Salt Lake City, Utah. Grew up here, lived up in Seattle for about 6 years, soon after, you know, graduating from university. I started my career at Ernst & Young in the Seattle area. Amazing springboard to my career. And I was
an ELI alum with myself. In Manhattan.
Oh, fantastic. What a great, great organization. Such great exposure to so many different companies and the way they do things. It's helped me just immensely throughout my whole career. After Ernst & Young, I moved over to AWS, back when AWS was kind of a small startup inside of Amazon that has obviously exploded into what it is today. I started their compliance program with two amazing humans, one Sarah and Chad, a couple of individuals in this space that just continue to be amazing folks leading compliance and other efforts there. You know, at AWS, we helped get their first kind of certifications and attestations, of which, you know, tens of thousands of their customers request. and rely on today. Since then, I've been at a number of other companies, Adobe, MX, Instructure. If you ever used Canvas in school, was Instructure's first head of security there to help start that program, and was an incredible journey there. Since then, worked at Workfront, Weave, and now at Drata. I've been at Drata over 2 years now. It has been the most action-packed 2 years of my entire career. For someone who loves to feel alive, it's been amazing to be a part of an organization that just helps feed that all the opportunities a CISO could ever wish and ask for. And so super grateful for them trusting me to be their security leader. It's a very humbling role, I think, more days than not. And here I lead our IT security compliance and privacy teams. I am a practitioner at heart. And you know, ultimately, we are customer zero of the Drata platform and SafeBase platforms. But one of the things I love most about this role is the opportunity to speak with just incredible humans like you, professionals in this space, and hopefully with, the intent to help others on their journey. So excited to have this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you very much for the very kind words. I do appreciate that. And very interesting background. So I'm glad we've got you on the show because I want to share your thoughts on compliance. Now, when I step back and look at GRC, it's changed quite a bit. I mean, I think 10 years ago, organizations, you'd go and you get Archer and you'd manually fill out some compliance evidence for a standard, and that was it. And then it started to change. Instead of just one standard, well, there's more. And there's different regulations being passed. And we then had to ask our developer, hey, could you fill out this survey? Could you fill out that one? Maybe one is for SOC 2 type 2 evidence. The other one is going to be for NIST maturity. Oh, I'm sorry, you're going to be doing business internationally. We need an ISO 27001. Oh, okay, yeah, we got healthcare data, we got to do HIPAA. And so as a result, whether it's the developers or whether it's IT or in my case, a CISO, I really didn't like asking to fill out multiple forms that are for the most part about 80% overlap. Now, the thing is, though, if you think it's a Venn diagram, there's some core ones, but you can't just lift one up and drop it on the other because it doesn't fit. And so these compliance tools started evolving until ultimately if we had a control framework that could map to multiple standards, then you're in business because we could say, well, yes, we are doing everything. We don't have a blind spot because we only built our compliance to, let's say, ISO 27001. And then it turns out there's a control that's not there that is over here. So, Matt, can you talk a little bit about what you've seen in GRC, recent changes over the last couple of years, and perhaps your perspective on where you see our industry?
You know, G-Mark, you described that perfectly, the journey that we've all experienced over probably the last 10 to 12 years. It's been wild to see that transition happen. And I've walked that journey a number of times at a number of companies starting their GRC programs from the ground up. You're right. We would start off by saying, okay, we need a SOC 2 Type 2 at the station, or before that, it was all SAS 70s, right? And when we started that journey, it was like, great, now we want to expand to other ones, and quickly realized, oh man, wait. Some of these actually look super familiar. Like, how do we make this work? Now, the idea of a common control framework has been around for a while now, but I'm just taking a look back beyond even just the last 2 years, but to the last 12 years. But I feel like in the last 4 or so years is when we've really seen these amazing, you know, GRC platforms enable our GRC teams. For a number of years now, you know, our security engineering and operations teams have had amazing, capable platforms supporting them with a number of incredible detection and response capabilities. It's been amazing working out of those tools as a security engineer myself as well. And it's been fun to be able to see how those have iterated. Now, our poor GRC team members have been stuck with some of the traditional tools and capabilities that we all started with at the beginning, you know, spreadsheets and Word documents and having to reach out to team members. And we tried to automate some of it by using Jira or other ticketing management tools to kind of automate those tasks. But it ultimately never got to a point where we could really rely on an end-to-end platform. And so, yeah, those last 4 to 5 years, these GRC platforms have surfaced to being these enablers and capable support mechanisms for our GRC teams. So one thing I'd say as a CISO is, you know, our GRC programs, our security programs are both journeys. No one is truly there, but it's that continual improvement experience. And I love being a part of that. At a time, I didn't like being a part of it because it always stressed me out. I was like, man, when are we going to be done? When are we there? How can we get to a point where we're good, right? And obviously, we all realize there's no such thing as an impenetrable organization and no such thing as absolute perfection in this space. My mechanical engineer brain does not like that. But it's been a fun learning experience to realize, actually, there's a great, great opportunity here to be in this journey. One of the things about just GRC in general is integrity, right? When you mention these different frameworks, it really is an integrity thing for the organization to sign up to comply with those. And so as part of that, it really is that at the, you know, the essence and core. And one of the most important things of these, you know, the journeys that we're on is really building and maintaining the trust of our customers over time. And we believe that we earn that every day, you know, and being accountable and transparent. Those are kind of the things that are, I think, at the core of building trust with other people. Like when you and I met at RSA, it was great to be able to take a moment, two humans just chatting and walk you along and sharing life experiences. It's a great connection experience. I think the same happens at organization levels. Now, the mechanism by which we do so today are a little bit different, probably more formal, right, with these attestations and reports that we have at the B2B kind of SaaS level. You know, many of them depend on a SOC 2 Type 2 or like an ISO 27001 certification. In the government space, you always have FedRAMP, the healthcare space, HIPAA, and a number of other different languages that we might say are used in there. But the main thing is continuing to maintain those over time. You're right. You know, when I started at one organization, we had probably 50 to 60 controls that were behind our SOC 2 Type 2 security at the time. It was just the only trust service principle. And then we're like, wait, we got to go after ISO 27001. We got to go after PCI DSS. We got to go after FedRAMP. We're like, oh man. But we're like, there's a number of shared aspects here. And so, you know, that's when the advent of these common control frameworks started coming out. And it really is one of the core elements of a program. Honestly, if you were to double click into that, it may not so much be the control wording that's the overlapping essence. It's the underlying process and evidence and the data that are truly shared across all of those. And I think that's where these platforms that are now available today to basically allow us to pull that data from those systems. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But it's nice to be able to align across all of those frameworks in a common way. It also allows us to have kind of one audit season. I don't know about you, D-Mark, but I've experienced a revolving door of auditors and customer auditors. It's been kind of a frustrating experience to be like, oh man, when is audit season going to end? It's going year round. But today with common control frameworks and with a number of assessors that are just amazing to work with, that, you know, they understand, hey, you know, we can pull once and map too many. And that's really enabled us to scale as GRC teams and staying lean, but also continue to grow to add additional frameworks. You know, we at Dorado work with small startups, you know, commercial as well as enterprise customers. All of them are at different parts of their journey and have different needs. It's been fun to be able to meet them where they are at to help them understand what their current needs are. And so with that, you know, many small startups are kind of looking at a SOC 2 Type 2, and then that becomes the springboard to their rest of their kind of GRC journeys. You know, in that case, a common control framework is what they usually adopt. Now, commercial enterprises, they usually will have their own common control framework, either, you know, one that they have built themselves or one that they have, you know, built in open source. We see that with some of the common control frameworks out today, or unified control framework. There's a number of them, but it's nice to be able to meet them where they're at and embed those in the platform, map control tests, and gather evidence to help support them on their journey with capabilities they didn't have prior. So it's been fun.
Yeah, and I appreciate on behalf of other SMB CISOs the fact that you've addressed that market. There's an awful lot of companies that said, hey, all we want are Fortune 500. Even get Fortune 100, the better. They don't realize that, well, first of all, the client that you cultivate, that CISO may eventually become one of those Fortune 500 CISOs. And if you built a good relationship while they were small, then and you they realize if your solution scales, you've got a lot better chance. So for those of you who are thinking out there from a business perspective, you know, it's not so much being nice to the little guy on your way up. It's be nice to the little guy on the little guy's way up, because these men and women may have an opportunity to do a whole lot more. But for what you've said, I'm hearing some theme. And it's one is trust verify. We want to go ahead and make sure that, yes, this is in there, but we have a way the auditors, they check to make sure. We're also shifting to a continuous compliance model rather than a single snapshot in time. You look good right now. And we kind of suck in our gut and we look really good. And then when they take the photograph and bluff, off we go, we want to keep going. Now, the trust but verify means we need evidence to show that something is working the way it should. Now, a developer, for example, would send an evidence like a screenshot, say some activity has happened. But instead of doing that once a year, could we pull that once a month? Well, why not if we could just pull it from the environment directly? Why do we have to put that human in the loop? Why do we have to create this to-do list item, which is going to interrupt the workflow? And now we're starting to see compliance tools that are going to integrate evidence pulls from the tools like access, authentication tools, and vulnerability management systems. And these make sense to me. Matt, what are you seeing about some big themes here as these tools evolve?
You know, G-Mark, you described that perfectly. You're spot on. Like, this is where the magic happens with these GRC platforms that exist today. You're right. It used to be that, you know, you and I, you know, in this space, we'd reach out sometimes via email. I don't know if Slack was available at the time, but near Jira and other capabilities, basically check in with control owners. Sometimes that was once a month. Sometimes that was once a quarter. And let's be honest, sometimes it may have been like a Hail Mary request 4 to 6 weeks before the auditors show up, say, hey, are we good to go here? And they're like, I'm actually not the control owner anymore. And then spins up all sorts of dialogue, anxiety, and pain. You know, in those instances, even when we did check in, you know, they would take some time and potentially identify one kind of judgmentally selected sample to give to the GRC team member, say, yep, we're all good. Here's an example. And it ends up being a perfect example of what you'd expect to see, only to turn out that that was one of probably hundreds or thousands of events in their, you know, control ownership process that we'd want to review. And then when the audit started, we'd all be surprised to find out that the auditor selected a few samples that we didn't have view into and understanding where they stood. And so now today, with API interfaces, with automation, with the capable platforms that we have now, even with AI included, you know, this is no longer the case. We have the ability to pull this information and actually assess the entire population. So when you say continuous compliance, it really is enabling that idea of where you stand every day of the audit period. Now, I mentioned integrity earlier. The anxiety attacks that I experienced as a CISO prior to now have largely been because if I ever felt like we were out of compliance on something, it was kind of a hit against personal integrity or the organization's integrity. And what it's been nice for me is with the ability to pull this information near real time or on a daily basis to be able to check in and see where we're at, it allowed me to know, hey, we're doing what we're saying we're doing, which I think is at the essence of integrity. So with this kind of advent of GRC platforms helping us with this continuous compliance stuff, it has totally changed the dialogue with internal control owners. Instead of asking like, hey, are you even the controller anymore? Or hey, you know, is your control operating effectively? You have an audit coming up and, you know, whatever. It is now, no, hey, we've got your back. Like, we're monitoring this stuff all the time. And in fact, when we reach out, it's going to be because we found something that wasn't operating as effectively as we thought it was, or it didn't pass a control test. And they're like, man, like the GRC team is behind me, like has got my back and we're ready to go. And so when audits show up, you know, when the auditors show up, we're ready to go. And the auditors know, like, and our internal control owners, they both know that, hey, we've got a tool in place that's letting us know when things like instances of non-compliance show up. And we've remediated those and, you know, work together to kind of like in flight remediate those on the way instead of it being a surprise. This has allowed us to be more predictable, more favorable in our audits. Definitely a ton of time savings associated with this that would replace the manual efforts that we've been plagued with prior to this time. You know, we show up to the audit having reviewed and checked off all of those items. So the exciting part here is it really helps us move from kind of the reactive side of GRC to proactive. And it really allows us to ultimately sleep better at night, but honestly, continue to scale our GRC programs to that next level. Last but not least, you know, I like to treat our auditors and assessors as customers. And, you know, when they show up, they are effectively representing our customers. And, you know, they also have a tough job. They're trying to find things of, you know, that might be of note here. And in some ways, they're also kind of advisors in the sense of helping us continue to improve our programs. And so with these platforms, we have an audit hub that allows that interaction to go super smoothly with them. Self-service sometimes, we're able to pull that information. We're able to show up to audits. What I like to do is show up is like with, you know, a nice, you know, present wrap with a bow of all the evidence they'd ever need to basically complete their audit in a super smooth and effective way. So they've been able to have a positive experience as a result of all these things now existing and reachable to all organizations.
Yeah, and it's interesting because some people don't appreciate the value that auditors offer. And I said, well, wait a minute, who would you rather find some problem? Your internal auditors who could then go ahead and help you get it fixed, particularly talk about proactive instead of, hey, here they go. Or some attacker who gets in there, exploits it because it wasn't fixed. Well, they give you free audits. It's just that their terms and conditions are slightly different. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But also, I think what we're seeing is some shifting out there in terms of compliance as code. So if you're using something like a Terraform or CloudFormation script and build an AWS cloud environment, then I'm thinking we should probably make those scripts meet our regulations as well. So are you seeing that? And can you talk a little bit about how that might be making a difference for companies as well?
Yeah. No, I'm super happy to talk about compliance as code because this is something that is, again, when we talk about shifting from reactive to proactive or preventative in this case, that's the essence of compliance as code. You know, we launched this a little under a year ago to our customers. And I don't know if you ever heard the saying, I think it's attributed to Benjamin Franklin, which is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound in cure. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the essence of what compliance as code is helping us here with. And so, you know, now we have AI that can generate more lines of code in a second than we can even comprehend. And we're like, oh man, we want to be able to deploy this stuff and move forward there. And it's like, man, we got to have the guardrails in place from a security standpoint and now with compliance as code from a compliance standpoint to really help us do the things we want to do as fast as we'd like to, and also run just as fast alongside our infrastructure teams that, you know, as they'd like to run. And so, you know, we've all had infrastructure as code for a while now. We've also had security scans on infrastructure as code for a while now. But, you know, a little under a year ago, we launched compliance as code to scan, you know, infrastructure as code during the CI/CD pipelines to identify any known compliance failures before they become, you know, a reality. So, you know, I've experienced this before where our DevOps or infrastructure platform teams would, you know, they want to go 100 miles an hour at some of these small startups or even large organizations where they're like, man, life's too short. You know, we got to move fast. And they do. And they're just some of those brilliant humans that I've worked with. And with that, though, it's like, man, the most frustrating experiences for them have been, we just got this deployed. We were launching, releasing it. And then our, you know, whether it be our compliance automation tools detecting something that was non-compliant after the fact, or like, you know, it may have been that it wasn't even monitored that part of the infrastructure. And they're like just furious thing. They have to go back and rebuild the whole underlying infrastructure to make sure certain components are compliant is just frustrating for them. It's frustrating for the compliance team. And, you know, in this case, you know, Drata helps on the detective side, but we really want to help on that preventative side. And so we came out with compliance as code. You know, ultimately in those experiences, they have to go destroy the resources, reinstantiate the resources, include the variable that, you know, instantiates the compliance setting and do that. But sometimes there's some defaults in Terraform that if not set, may be in a non-compliant state. And so the nice thing about compliance code is as we have it deployed today is, well, it'll identify those and surface those during the pull request. Say, hey, you're creating this instance that's not going to be compliant. You need to make sure, you know, this is set so that they can do that then. You know, you end up with, you know, one resource created for the price of creating two resources. It's you've got it right the first time, which again, I think is in line with some of the most incredible technology standards and the professionals that I work with. They're like, I want to do it right the first time. Like, and so it really helps them feel like, again, another way the GRC has their back and is not seen as kind of an inhibitor or blocker. It's a enabler. And so, you know, when you think about security by design or compliant by design or privacy by design, it's so great to be able to embed this when code is being instantiated. And I think that's the essence of this motive here. And so, you know, there's another way, again, we keep our people moving fast and compliant at the same time.
And I think it's really important because there's advantage to speed, both in terms of time to market, et cetera, but lack of rework and the cost effectiveness of that. And so for those, a team member could indicate that the effort involved to be able to produce a fully functional and that will pass all our requirements is dropped because we don't have the rework done. That's amazing. And so it really starts to pay for itself after a while. Now, another thing, and this is kind of a personal thing for me, is customer compliance issue. Because as a CISO, I faced this issue before. Let's use an example of, okay, got a company that sells cybersecurity software. And now you have to meet a company's third-party risk management requirements. It doesn't necessarily have to be selling software. It could be providing services because I do services work in my CISO work. And they send up things like that. Can we see your policy? Can we see your SOC 2 type? Can we fill up this 342-word questionnaire? And sometimes we push back and say, look, we're too small for SOC 2 type 2. It's not cost-effective, first of all. And you're not going to get anything meaningful out of it. But the problem is that these third-party risk management questions come out here. And then I get things that say, well, we want to know your fourth and fifth things. Like, do you audit? Prove that you audit your suppliers. Like, my biggest supplier is Microsoft, for crying out loud. I can't walk in the door and say, let me go ahead and look at your source code. And so what we find then, this third-party risk management becomes kind of a real difficult problem. So how do I deal with that around the GRC?
Yeah, there's definitely two sides of that coin, right? You've got the customer-facing, customer due diligence side of a GRC program, and you also have the internal side, which is the, oh, hey, we have our own third parties that we need to make sure are compliant. I think at the essence of everything we do as a security team and as a GRC team, as a privacy team, is to build and maintain the trust of customers. Like, why do we defend our company against breaches? It's because we are protecting our customers' data or whatever it may be. We want them to continue to trust us doing so. And so No better way to be able to surface that than through a trust center. I'll talk about that. And then no better way to do that than an effective vendor risk management, capability within the organization. So, you know, I'm seeing vendor risk management or TPRM, third-party risk management, all fitting under the R in GRC. Using third parties has an inherent risk. And I think in all of that effort, we are trying to quantify what level of risk that might have on our organization. We're only as secure as that weakest link than our third and fourth and fifth parties. I'd like to believe that our purpose isn't necessarily to go and find and weed them out, unless they're grossly negligent in their efforts, but to go and find and help them continue to improve. One kind of paradigm shift for me in my mindset when I was at a small fintech organization was we had this revolving door of bank and financial institutions showing up and auditing us, and the questionnaires wasn't enough, a SOC 2 type 2 wasn't enough, PCI DSS, ROC wasn't enough. It was, we need to come on site for 2 to 3 days and ask you questions. And what I realized quickly was like, man, this is painful. But then when I realized the other side of that coin, which is we're here to help them, build trust in our organization's capabilities, but we're also here to learn. Like, we're also here to help improve our own security programs to meet their standards. And when I've approached it in those, with that kind of mindset, it really has changed my ability to show up and say, no, I'm here to help. I'm here to learn. Let us know if there's a specific gap here in how we're doing something. Love to learn that so we can improve and grow. And so again, it's trying to find that weakest link and help buoy them up so we have this matrix of organizations that are all reliant on each other. We can all benefit as a result. And so that's been a really cool kind of paradigm shift there. Now, Drata's mission is to build trust in the cloud. We really do through our most recent acquisition of SafeBase. Allow organizations to showcase their security and compliance efforts in a seamless, automated, self-service, customer-centric, and scalable way. And, recently back with some AI models that really help embolden both sides of that coin, whether it be filling out questionnaires, we'll talk about that, but then also reviewing third parties. We spend so much time vetting third parties. Sometimes, DMARC, I worry that, when organizations are showing up and vetting their third parties, they haven't taken a moment to really purposefully and intentionally try to understand the why behind some of the questions they're asking. I think when we do that, it will probably reduce the 400 question questionnaire to maybe, 14 to 20 or even, 30 questions that are very, very pointedly worded to really help that. I'm seeing more and more organizations do that, which is really heartening to reduce both the burden of questionnaires, but also reduce the burden of unnecessary questions that may not necessarily be asked, but really focus on what really matters. And so with that, it's been awesome to be able to see, again, that improvement. But, again, we have the trust side, which is where we can display this stuff to customers. We'll talk about that in a minute when we, kind of discuss a little bit around the revenue unlock as a result of having a good GRC program. But on the other side, it's like, oh, man, like, what documents do I need? How can I review these? I don't know about you, but I've scrolled through thousands of pages of SOC 2 report looking for the words exception noted and management response or, qualification. Man, no better job than having a capable large language model ingest that document and find those for us and surface those within, seconds versus, sometimes you and I maybe 5 to 10 minutes each or otherwise just to find the things that stand out. We're doing that today in our platform with Drata AI and the opportunity for us to basically go through and grep and kind of pull out those answers and questionnaires or, responses in their SOC 2 reports to really help us know what are the true risks here? With an entire GRC platform now, you can then take vendor risks and surface that as an external risk to your risk register, which has been another great way to really holistically have all your risks in one place, replacing some of the traditional spreadsheets that we may have used or ticketing system dashboards around risk management, risk registers to a full platform that ties them all out. So when your board says, man, what third parties do we have with any criticals and high risks? We're like, here they are. And you can see where those are at and you can work with those third parties and their associated risks to burn those down over time and increase, their compliance posture and security posture at the same time. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. I don't know how that resonates, but what are your thoughts?
Well, it does sound really good, but we got two ends of it. One is, of course, interpreting your third-party SOC 2 and all the other reports. The other one is filling them all out, which, as I said, is kind of the biggest headache that I have. And I'm hearing more and more something about called the AI questionnaire assistance or AIQA, and I got to give it a name, AIQA. We'll see if that catches on. Anybody know it started right here if that picks up. But can you tell us, our listeners, what is that and what does it really mean in terms of compliance?
Yeah. And so to answer that, like, I don't know how much time you spent working with, say, ChatGPT or large language models out there, but it has been just incredible, like, to redirect our brains from going straight to Google for questions or straight to any kind of search engine using for your questions and answers to, hey, you know, what large language model can educate me on whatever it may be? And you know, when we think about all these questions coming from our customers, it's no different than basically posing all those questions to a large language model fueled with a knowledge base that can answer those for us and taking that first pass. Now, you know, we're not full sending that through and then sending those to customers. We obviously have the human in the loop to help verify that the answers come back as accurate. I know you and I have probably experienced times where we've gotten a response back from a large language model and in infuriating ways have raged against the machine and raged against the machine learning in this case to the point where we're like, man, you're driving me crazy. I just posed the question and you answered something completely different than I expected. It's cool to see those progress. But what I will say is now with, you know, well-trained models and with a capable knowledge base, sometimes our customers with SafeFaces AI QA will have, you know, a knowledge base between 2,000 to 3,000 questions and answers accrued over the years of questions asked by customers with, you know, acceptable answers. These large language models take that. They take the next questionnaire that got sent over, takes the first pass at it, usually taking minutes to fill those out, and your GRC team members on their way, just double checking and make sure all the answers are right. And boom, like, especially at the end of the month or end of the quarter, it is so nice to have that capability versus, you know, the stack of like questionnaires that have come through and you're trying to go through each one of those. It's just not scalable. And so it's great that we now have AI QA to help answer those and just accelerate this process. And again, life is short. We also want to spend life doing something that is beyond answer these questions, especially when we have capability today to do that for us. So AI QA is here to help. And it's been amazing seeing that accelerate us as well as our customers at the same time.
Got it. Now, I'm moving along because we're covering all kinds of stuff, and I realize I only got about 15 minutes to go. One of the trickier topics, and I think important, though, is how do we evaluate the credibility of the evidence provided by third parties? Because we all know that we're filling out these forms like, yeah, kind of what do they want to hear? But at the same time, I'm always pretty honest about them because I say, look, if there's something that I learn from these questionnaires going, wow, I never thought about that. That's not a bad idea. Let me put that on my to-do list. But also, if somebody else is just, when the Navy is called gun decking, which just means like, yeah, we're compliant, but you don't actually do it. What about something like this? Let's say I'm considering purchasing a new piece of software. I asked the vendor for a SOC 2 Type 2 report. Here it is, but it's from some small unknown accounting firm in India, which kind of raises a fair question. How do we determine whether this report is really genuinely trustworthy versus just a checkbox exercise that they had some low-cost auditor with maybe questionable rigor in terms of how they're doing that versus, like we had talked about, an E&Y who came in there and will put their imprimatur on it and say, yep, this is trustworthy. We deal with that.
Yeah. I'll kind of chalk this one up as kind of a spicy question in the industry right now, right? Like, as many folks are starting to ask this question, it seems to be a growing concern in the industry. But the reality is you're right. We have a known set of, you know, well kind of known and trusted assessing organizations out there. Here at Drata, we have an audit alliance where we have the ability to go through and say, hey, like, when our customers show up to us, you say, hey, like, we'd like to use your platform, but we'd also like to know, like, do you know of any auditors that, you know, are credible in this space? And, you know, as part of that journey of helping them discover where they need to go, we have a number of, again, third-party, just independent assessment organizations that we can recommend. Many of the providers in the space do that. But you're right, like, with this kind of concern, I'll call it auditor roulette almost, where it's like, hey, like, and then sometimes in assessment organizations, you may have some assessors a little bit different and maybe is more thorough or a little more technically savvy than others. And so I think you and I have probably experienced those over the years. But you know, there are incredible, again, assessors out there that are what I'll call Drata friendly or GRC automated, your automation platform friendly, in the sense that they understand what's going on behind the scenes. The reality is companies like Drata, we have the ability to then pull information from source systems and present that and monitor that. Now, if the assessment organization wants to follow that from cradle to grave, from the source system where we originally got screen prints, or, you know, and the, you know, when we first started on this pathway to, like, to the very end where they're seeing the result in the system, auditors can do that today with their, you know, our customers that are using Drata today. But, you know, independence is a huge part of a credible third party assessment organization and the quality and reputation assessors really does carry weight. So I don't know the tiering structure or what reputation, you know, who's what and where, but it really is up to the organization to make sure that they're using an assessment organization that is seen in the industry as, hey, like we, oh, great. I see that name before. It looks like they do a good job. I've been assessed by them before. Maybe another statement that's common, but the reality is, you know, again, most of them are following in good faith, doing this the right way, which is a heartening thing to see. You know, I'd like to believe that people are inherently good. I like to believe assessors and organizations that are going about this are inherently good and are trying to do this in good faith efforts. And, you know, again, we have a great audit alliance that organizations can work with to help them on their journey kind of help assess the way that we'd expect them to be assessed.
Yeah, and it seems like a good way to differentiate if you're a small or medium-sized auditing firm to say, hey, look, we're using an automated collection tool, something you can point to that we're not just randomly filling out questionnaires as they pour us drinks or buy us donuts or something like that, but we actually have some way to validate that. And that'll differentiate a smaller firm or even something from even another company. Say, look, this is what we use. We use this tool. You can look it up and it works pretty well. Now, also, but questionnaires are sort of shifting around. Now, it used to be everybody was trying to standardize on something like standardized information gathering questionnaire, the SIG. And then Cloud Security Alliance had their own consensus assessment initiative questionnaire, the CAIQ, which you pronounce like cake. Are these the most common, or is everybody shifting their own questionnaire, or somehow are we going to get to the one question that answers everything, which to me seems like a disaster because it doesn't address what we talked about earlier, such as the overkill for the type of questions asking for a particular third party or vendor.
Yeah, it's I'm seeing that it's all over the place though, right? We see many organizations still show up to with a cake or a SIG, right? And it's very, very, you know, industry centric. We have those already pre-filled out. It actually makes the conversation go a whole lot faster as a result. And so those have been helpful. Now, the reality is we want to meet customers where they're at, right? It really is a leadership principle of meeting other people where they're at instead of expecting them to meet you where you're at. And so I think that principle still applies here when it comes to customer questions. And so when they show up, you know, they may have their own custom questionnaire. And in many cases, when they are short and pointed and well thought out, it's a really good use of time to help, you know, them, you know, get the answers that they're looking for in the construct that they have set up. So we definitely want to meet them where they're at. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, is like really want organizations and encourage them to take a moment and look at the questions they're asking third parties and decide, are these really the ones that are going to help us identify any risks for our organization? And if not, you have the power to change those questions to really make it, again, an intentional and purposeful exercise. So again, take that moment and really just see what questions you are asking, and that really will help you in this process. It'll speed up time on your team. It'll help you, again, continue to grow and progress as an organization because you have freed up time there. So yeah, definitely encourage on that space. But again, we're seeing it all over the place, and that's why AIQA exists. I think while we all would like to see less and less on the questionnaire front, keeping them intentional is a good step in the right direction of hopefully relying on the existing mechanisms that we had prior to questionnaires, or even to hopefully replace questionnaires. I think originally is the right way to say that, but it's nice to see again the progression in that space.
Yeah, and I think that another I'm seeing is more of a focus on cyber risk quantification. Yeah, we want compliance, but the easy things we're not going to be compliant with. So we document those as risks. We put some value on the likelihood and the impact and what could harm, and then we do the high, medium, low, and we have a qualitative view or have a quantitative view in numbers, and those numbers are really hard to prove. That goes back to the old FIPS Pub 65 for those who want to go back in the archives of the 1980s. I remember working with that one. And you know, some of the things like you can't put a number on it, at least not too many significant digits. And other people want to use the FAIR methodology, the factor analysis of information risk. And what do you recommend that people use and the like?
You know, this one is a really hard question, because I was thinking about it, like, I don't know if you ever read the book, The Failure of Risk Management or How to Measure Anything in Cybersecurity by Douglas Hubbard. You know, Hubbard really encourages us to say, like, hey, traditional risk management methods, particularly those that rely on like qualitative techniques like matrices or intuition or arbitrary scoring, like he feels that they're like deeply flawed and often misleading, and you know, can sometimes create this kind of false sense of truly assessing risk. Instead, you know, Hubbard kind of helps encourage all of us to say, hey, like there are quantitative evidence-based methods like, you know, probabilistic modeling or Monte Carlo simulations to use kind of like events in the frame methodology to assess and manage risks more accurately, and kind of equating or yielding an annual loss equivalency to really help you know, organizations use a dollar amount of potential likelihood at impact that year to, you know, switch around investments or identify where they should really focus. I've seen both use in action. It is fascinating to see the difference in conversations and approaches and effort that goes into each of those. I feel like I need a master's degree in actuarial science to do the Monte Carlo subject. But honestly, it doesn't. In some cases, it's super super intuitive to go through and sit down and using these simulations and using the right kind of like range of impact from a dollar standpoint and frequency to then run the simulations to say, hey, this year, this may impact us at this amount, and this is why we want to invest in this area. And it really helps in making that a more kind of quantitative approach. And so again, seeing both, I'm seeing customers use both of those. I do see that, you know, the qualitative method ends up being one that's a little bit more intuitive by internal team members to say, hey, like if we had a range here, how bad is this? Right. Mm-hmm. And if we had a range here, like how frequent might this happen? And sure, then we yield like a heat map that it's like, hey, this last, you know, quarter, we saw this pixel, or sorry, we saw this, you know, risk move like 14 pixels to the left. And you're like, what yielded that, right? And so then we get back to the, well, we should probably make it a little more quantitative. So I've seen both. Both have been, I guess, generally successful in communicating risk and burning down in a large quantity. The more mature organizations that I've seen really do use kind of that, the quantitative model to get there.
Got it. Now, what are the biggest mistakes you think that a lot of GRC programs make and things that people get wrong?
You know, one of the things that came to mind on, you know, as I thought through this is not really tailoring their GRC programs to meet the needs of the actual business. You know, many leaders will come in and be like, hey, this is kind of a checklist approach. We need this, this, and this. And it's very, I like to say it's an art to be a security and GRC professional, to show up to an organization with the experience that you have to truly tailor your, you know, the needs of the organization and your compliance program to the needs of the organization. Like B2C SaaS is very different than B2B SaaS versus professional services versus brick and mortar stores. And like, you know, very much need to prescribe those needs to that organization. And so with that, you know, that probably one of the biggest mistakes. The second one I think of is, you know, just not being able to adequately explain the why behind controls and frameworks and GRC efforts. And so being able to sit down with anyone in the organization and explain it in a way that they understand the why behind them doing something has been helpful. It also allows for a very collaborative effort to decide, oh my gosh, like that makes total sense. And we could probably do this in a better way by going about this way. So, and the last but not least, and this is a space, is kind of a call out to many of my GRC peers in the space, is having that technical expertise, showing up to the table, be able to dive as deep in the technical details as their security, DevOps, and infrastructure counterparts are to really, you know, understand and help there. So that's been awesome. I will have one last one here that I thought about, which is just not being able to measure the impact of their GRC program on the business. You know, with the advent of trust centers, like I just mentioned a moment ago, like you're able to tie the requests from customers to your CRM to understand the revenue impact of, you know, all the documents that are being requested, to understand which documents are being requested. So you can continue those, and then which things have been requested, but you don't have yet that you should add. And it's allowing GRC programs to show up to their board meetings and fuel their CISOs and their executive team members with data such as, hey, because of our capable GRC program, we unlocked X million in revenue last quarter, last month, last year. It really is turning GRC programs into a business enabler instead of the cost center or blocker that may be seen previously. And so that may be another mistake, is not being able to surface those numbers like we can today with these, you know, trust centers that can enable that.
Yeah, got it. Okay, we've got just about a minute or two left. So it's been an incredible amount of information here, and I appreciate you being on the show to talk about this. So before we wrap up, any last thoughts that you might have that maybe we didn't get a chance to talk about yet that we could kind of put out here?
Man, we talked about a ton. We talked about trust centers. We talked about vendor risk manager. We talked about compliance automation. You know, honestly, I think it's just a call out to the industry to continue to improve and grow as professionals. This is a very humbling role to be in, whether you're on the GRC side, or the security side, or the CISO side. When you look at all of the things that a CISO needs to worry about day in and day out, it's probably not a very mentally healthy role. and so as I look at this, I want to get probably more human here and just share out to the industry that like this is a painful role at times mentally. And so taking that time that we need to really recoup, whether that be meditating, whether that be helping us, take the time to like really put boundaries into the time at work. Like when I say life is short, that applies to life outside of work as well. And so, in this role, there's a lot of pressure here. And so with that, I like to have a lot of grace towards other peers in the space, whether they may be direct competitors or whether they may be others in the space, other CISOs, to really have that grace and humanity towards others to realize they really are trying their best. And so I wanted to say that, as you evaluate where you're at, take the time to mentally, relax and also realize that this is, again, a journey, not an end state, and have some grace for yourself and others along that way. And so, again, that's probably the thing that I would probably end here on related to just
a lot of good wisdom. I could probably pay attention to that. Hey, how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about Drata if they want to follow up?
Sure. So for Drata, just head to Drata.com and sign up for a demo. We have an incredible team to help support you and meet you where you're at, wherever you may be in that journey. I also like to assist and help with our sales and customer success team members as well. It's fun to be able to meet with our customers, prospects, as well as a CISO to help them on their journey. So that's there for me. I'm on LinkedIn, pretty easy to find there. Just Matt Hillary at Drata, and happy to help you wherever you are at.
Well, thank you. This has been absolutely awesome. So for our listeners and our viewers out there, thank you for sticking around for CISO Tradecraft. I hope you found this incredibly valuable. And if you had, pay it forward. Go ahead and share this with your other professionals. Let them know where you get your information. Don't forget, if you subscribe to us, we also have a Substack newsletter. We have shorts that we put out on YouTube as well as the full episode. And follow us on LinkedIn because we're a whole lot more than the podcast. We put out regular information that'll help you out. So thank you very much again for being part of our team today. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy. Matt, thank you very much for being on our show. And until next time, everybody, stay safe out there.